And we'll start with China, and specifically Xi Jinping's visit to four countries in Europe. He hasn't gotten to the fourth one yet. The fourth one is Russia. But we're going to talk. We talked about his visit to France last week and how. I'm burping while I'm talking, but yeah. So we talked about his visit to France last week and how that appeared to be a reciprocation of all the diplomatic missions that France and Macron have been taking to China, you know. And I talked about how even just going through the motions of exercising some kind of independent, you know, foreign policy agenda, even if you didn't actually mean it, even if you're, you know, are misguided in the idea that you're going to get all of Europe with you on this mission, at the very least, France, by way of these actions, is going to be in a better position to capitalize on the rise of the multipolar world when they come to the realization, and I believe it's going to be a when, not an if, when they come to the realization that they can't bring Europe with them. Because every European nation is going to have to go about the multipolar world in their own way because they have their own interests. Like, I do believe Europe is going to be a multipolar continent in time. Not just in terms of being integrated into the multipolar world, but in terms of having multiple poles of power that act independently of one another. I'm not entirely certain of the lifespan of the EU at this moment in time. I'm not entirely certain of the lifespan of NATO at this time. Because both of those are impingent on the survival of the U.S. Empire, and that is the opposite of a guarantee. The Empire is dying. So, I talked about the benefits that France would have as a trading nation, and part of the things that made France such a powerhouse in Europe right up until the present day, really. Although they're not, you know, in relative terms, not quite the powerhouse they used to be with the rise of Germany and now with the modernization of Russia, you know. But France was and still is a powerhouse because they are a continental European nation. They had a beefy population, at one point the second largest in Europe after the Russians. And they had access to the sea lanes and commerce and trade, a direct line of trade with the Mediterranean because they have their own southern coastline. So all that trade, they have access to the Atlantic and the North Atlantic, the North Sea, and they have, you know, direct land trade with Germany, Spain, all the, and think about it, Britain, Spain, Portugal, and the Italian city-states. I mean, all these centers of wealth, and then the Netherlands with the Dutch and their empire built on trade. All these centers of wealth, and France was smack dab in the middle of all of them. So when you combine that with having direct access to trade with Asia, the East, which was the entire purpose of, you know, the colonization of the entire world on the part of the Europeans. When you combine that and you put it in the context of a multipolar world, France can reprise that role and carve out a very nice slice of the new multipolar world for themselves. And we talked about that. But what we're talking about here is Xi Jinping's visit to Serbia and Hungary. Now, when Xi Jinping visited Serbia, he went there and he gave a speech commemorating the anniversary of NATO's bombing of the Chinese embassy. And I believe that this was a shot across the bow, one towards NATO and towards the unipolar world order, as a means of saying, this is what the unipolar world got you, you know, to Serbia and to the world, you know, because everyone's going to have their own examples. I mean, we bomb so many people around the world, they can, you can fill in the blank, right? Every peoples that we've bombed can fill in the blanks for the Chinese embassy or, you know, Serbian high rises that they don't repair the high rises. They keep them there damaged as a reminder of what NATO did when we bombed Belgrade. You know, so every country that has ever been bombed by the United States and by NATO forces can sit there and fill in the blank with their own context when Xi Jinping says this, you know, commemorating the anniversary of NATO's bombing of the Chinese embassy, saying, look, Serbia, because it's also a message to Serbia, we have this in common. When you were bombed, we were bombed, and not a single one of them cared. Not a single one of these people who claim to care so much about peace and democracy cared. Not a single one of these people who claim to love peace and who want to prevent world war cared. that they were bombing us or you, you know? So we have a connection. We have a connection on top of this strategic partnership we have, because China has a strategic partnership with Serbia. We are in this together. Our interests are aligned. They have been trying to encircle you, and they've been much more successful at encircling Serbia than they have with China, but they want to encircle us too. And I'm speaking, you know, from the perspective of Xi Jinping. They want to encircle us too. They want to cut us off from the world. They want to contain us. But we can work together with other nations such that we will never be contained. We can't be contained. And if you work with us, you can't be contained either. And this, a similar message is being sent to Hungary, who's also, by way of, for the time being, they are also encircled by way of Ukraine. But once Ukraine is out of the way, and I've speculated on this since the beginning of this war, once Ukraine is out of the way and Russia has a direct land border with Hungary, the encirclement is broken. The encirclement is broken. Hungary and Serbia will exit stage left so fast it'll make your fucking head spin. It's not like they're going to leave the EU. They're going to leave NATO. Well, Serbia is not a part of either of them, so they can kind of do what they want, but they're one country removed from the multipolar world order on all fronts. But Hungary will be their way out, ironically. But Hungary... So Hungary is the key country here, because any Russian pipeline that comes in towards Serbia would likely come in through Hungary. And Hungary will probably be bribed, like the Turks were, to become a gas hub for Russian oil and natural gas going into the Balkans. You know, with Serbia as the first, well, second customer after Hungary itself. But Hungary is going to be the sort of keystone for this. They're not going to leave the EU and NATO immediately. In fact, fucking NATO and the EU might collapse in on themselves before Hungary even puts that up to a referendum, like the Brits did. But what's going to happen is Hungary and Serbia are going to go through reindustrialization, right? They're going to link themselves up and link their industries up with the vast markets of the East, which they will be able to reach by way of these railroads that move through Russia. And once Russia has conquered Ukraine, you'll be able to take a railroad from Hungary across the Carpathian Mountains into the newly occupied territories in Ukraine to the Dnieper River, and then get on a boat, sail it, and now you can go anywhere. Now you can go anywhere. And that's the way out. That's going to be their way out. And you're going to see economic growth, you're going to see double-digit economic growth coming out of the Hungarians and the Serbs, because they're relatively small economies, so it's not like they don't have a lot of baggage holding them down, right? They don't have a lot of baggage, so you can get this kind of growth out of an economy like that. It's much harder to do with larger economies, but you can kind of, so the equivalent for a big economy would be like 6-9% growth year on year, which is something that the Chinese can do, that's something that the Russians are going to be doing. It's something that we can do, and probably will be doing in time. But you're going to get double-digit growth out of these two countries, and the difference between Hungary and Serbia's economic situation as opposed to the rest of Europe, who's already in recession now, and who's going to be dealing with stagnation, especially with the demographic pictures of Europe coming into play, when you see Russia, Hungary, and Serbia, who all also have declining demographics. Russia might change due to a baby boom from winning the war in Ukraine. That's, you know, something I'm watching out for. But all these countries have declining demographics, right? So their populations are all going to be in decline. So then to see three countries with double-digit, you know, growth, and Russia having, you know, 5-8% growth on their economy, it's like, well, wait a second, I thought we were the rich countries in Europe, not them. I thought that we, the West, I thought we were the economic center of the world. How come they get to have, how come the Hungarians and the Serbs get to have double-digit growth? How come the Russians get to have 5, 6, 7, 8% growth when we, Germany, have a recession, a depression? When we, France, have a recession, a depression? When we, Britain, have a depression, depression? How come they get to have that and we don't? Oh, they have cheap energy from Russia. Oh, they have a direct line, a direct lifeline to the markets of the East. 3 billion people between India and China alone. Oh, they're reindustrializing. They're hooked up to an international settlement currency that's backed by gold. Oh, they back their own currencies by gold. And I think that's coming down the pipeline for just about every country on the planet. Oh, they're doing all these things that we're not. Oh, wow. And I think that difference is going to have consequences in the mindsets of European nations. And it starts with this. It starts small. And it's this. We're watching it happen right now. China is going to link up with Russia. And the two of them are going to come together to link up with Hungary and Serbia. And they might just take all the Balkans with them. I'm not gonna lie to you. The Russians aren't gonna want anything to do with the Europe. The saving grace for the Balkans, right? Because this could be, you know, one of those things where the Russians become the policemen of Eastern Europe. The Russians are so tired of the word Europe that they're not gonna want anything to do with Europe. Like, they might make an exception for Hungary. They might make an exception for Serbia. They might make an exception for, you know, Moldova. And they might make an exception for Lithuania simply by way of the fact that they have to go through Lithuania to get to Kaliningrad, the Russian enclave north of Poland. But aside from that, that's it. And they're not gonna want to go any further into Europe. That they're gonna be so happy to leave that part of their history behind them. They're gonna take back the Russian world. They're gonna put 1 million border forts down between themselves and those pesky Europeans who keep invading them every 100 years. And they're never gonna look back. They're never gonna look back for the rest of the century. And that's a political revolution. We're watching a political revolution, not just in the United States, that's going to take the United States away from Europe. We're watching a political revolution inside of Russia that's going to take Russia away from Europe. That's something we haven't seen ever. That's something we haven't seen. The last time we came close to seeing something like that was with Russia's defeat in the Crimean War, which, you know, left the door wide open for the unification of Germany and Italy. So we have no clue where this is going to go. Because the Russians aren't going to want anything to do with Europe. They don't want anything to do with Europe. They want to be all, they're going to be the ones doing a pivot to Asia. And the last place that they want to so much as look at on a map is going to be the Europeans. Especially once all this Ukraine stuff is over, the American Empire dies and all these European nations wake up and realize, oh, we kind of need all that cheap Russian energy, and they come to Russia hat in hand, pestering the Russians. The Russians aren't going to want to hear a word from the Europeans. They'll be happy to be on better terms with Europe, but they're not going to turn back. Not for the rest of this century. And we have a lot of years left to go in this century. This is a political revolution in the making. So the country that's actually going to be moving into Europe, expanding influence in Europe, I should say, not necessarily moving into Europe, is going to be China. They're the one who's going to be expanding economic influence in Europe. The Russians are going to do that begrudgingly because they're not going to want anything to do with Europe. But again, another saving grace that the Chinese are thousands of miles away from the Europeans, and even more so than the United States is. So the Europeans aren't going to be encroached on by any of the major powers of this day, aside from maybe the Ottoman Turks. Maybe. That's the maybe there. Or maybe some revanchist North African states. You never know what the future holds. I'll just throw that out there as a, you know. But Europe is going to be in a position where they're going to be more isolated than they have ever been since antiquity, right? Because antiquity, you couldn't even really travel between the East and the West like that. I mean, some people could and did make the journey, but it wasn't like a regular thing like you see today. In political ways, Europe is going to be every bit as isolated as they were in antiquity. And I'm not entirely sure how well they're going to respond to that. Or what's going to, you know, pop up from that. That kind of an incubator, where the Europeans are left to themselves and their own devices and their own thoughts. You never know what kind of new political revolution might come up. Maybe they'll get a renaissance. Who knows? It could be beautiful. It could be ugly. We just don't know. But this is something that I'm looking at as I'm thinking beyond just what the multipolar world has to offer for Hungary and Serbia. And perhaps, because some of these countries are going to be really slow on the take, right? But we're watching a political revolution. And that political revolution is making its way into Europe from the East, specifically from the Balkans. And then there's the second revolution, that is the American Revolution, that's going to smack them in the face from the West with the increasing absence and apathy of the Americans towards Europe. They're going to look over there and they're going to see Greece with a brand new, with a shiny new port from the Chinese. They're going to see Serbia, Hungary with cheap energy from the Russians, exporting their goods to China and India like as though they live 2 feet away. And they're going to be watching them have industry, and they're going to be saying, wait, what a second, why are we deindustrialized? What happened to our industry? What happened to the Ruhr Valley? What happened to Birmingham? What happened to Paris? Oops. We're watching a political revolution. We're watching a political revolution. And in Xi Jinping's visit to Hungary, or Viktor Orban said something very interesting. He said, we are living in a multipolar world order. And one of the pillars of this new world order is the People's Republic of China, the country that is now setting the course of the world economy and world politics. So, oh, and Xi Jinping also declared a strategic partnership between China and Hungary as well. So now that's Hungary, Serbia, and Russia that the Chinese have a strategic partnership with, that I know of. So there will be a Belt and Road project that runs through all three of these countries with the end goal of linking up with Greece, I would assume, because that's where the big port of Piraeus is, right? So looking at the map, you can see where all this is, you know, sort of heading. You can see the players involved and what the interests are likely to be, but judging by, you know, the Belt and Road as a sort of guiding light. But what this also highlights, with Orban and his words, what Orban and his words, specifically his nice and kind words towards China, which is something you're not going to get out of most European leaders, right? Because they've gone along with the hype train of we need to hate Russia, we need to hate China too, because they're authoritarian dictators and we can't talk to them and blah blah fucking blah, all this childish shit. But they bought into that same hype too. So, and they're going to have to get over themselves if they want to have a functioning relationship with China. Because the Chinese are also getting to a point where they're not going to be the ones doing the reaching out. Right. They reached out to France because France reaches out to them. Right. And I think that's one of the reasons. The Duran says it was sort of a courtesy that they went to a Western nation and not just Serbia and Hungary. But I think that the reciprocation of France's diplomatic missions to China is one of, if not the main reason why they even bothered to go to France in the first place. But China isn't going to be reaching out to the Europeans either, because the Europeans, like the United States, keep shutting the door on them. And they're tired of dealing with these people. You'd be too if you had to listen to them lecture you about things they don't actually believe. But you have this political revolution, and I believe that Orban's speech, specifically that lovely sentence right there, that zinger, highlights, I want to say, a beginning of the new world, a beginning of the new world order. Illuminati confirmed. But would it be accurate to say it's the beginning of the new, perhaps the beginning of this new world's order, of the multipolar world in Europe, right? I think that'd be a much better way of putting it. The Viktor Orban's statements towards China mark the beginnings of the multipolar world in Europe. And from this moment onwards, we're going to see nations adapt to that change, embrace that change, and oppose that change. And it remains to be seen how well the nations who oppose that change do. Right. And it also highlights a dynamic that's also going to be at play, that's also going to be in play for the rest of this decade, and perhaps a few years out. I'm going from now to, say, 2035 or something, which is going to be the withdrawal of the United States by way of political revolutions inside of the United States that simply don't support a permanent military and permanent diplomatic presence around the world. Right. The second American Revolution just isn't going to be able to tolerate that. We're already at a point now where mass immigration is under fire. We're already at a point now where these massive multi-billion dollar aid packages are being labeled as treason, right? And are coming under fire from people that aren't me, if you can believe it. We're already at that point where even places like Israel are under fire, right? Supposedly our greatest ally. Even they are being scrutinized within the context of this political revolution in the United States. There's not going to be a U.S. global presence for much longer by way of internal changes in the United States. So as we start, because we're only just starting now, Trump was an indicator. His first term was an indicator. The second term will be the confirmation. As we start to really pull back from the world, and part of that's going to be forced, you know, upon us before Trump even gets into office again. But as we pull back, and as Americans come to the consensus by way of the L's that we're taking in Ukraine, in Israel, in Taiwan, from all these, one L after the next, Americans are just going to be like, you know what, maybe we don't need to be involved in the world. You know what, maybe all these alliances aren't actually good for us. You know, maybe we need to focus on our own country. And that's going to be the death knell for the American global role, the global presence. So the withdrawal of the United States combined with the expansion of Chinese influence around the world, filling in the gap almost immediately and preemptively in a number of places, that is also a political revolution that the Europeans are going to be smack dab in the middle of. And It remains to be seen how a lot of these developments that are overlaying and on top of one another, how they impact places around the world, Europe, Africa, the Middle East. We're watching the Middle East in real time now, but Europe and Africa are going to be, I would say the battleground, but it's not going to be much of a battle because the United States is going to want to be there. It's as simple as that. But alas, that's enough about China and speculations on the multipolar world in Europe.